You're listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwartz and Derek Johnson on FM 1017 and 1320 KLWN.
It's 4 o'clock and this is Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Derek Johnson. I am Nick Schwartz. Thanks for rolling with us on a Thursday afternoon. We've got another edition of Hey Twitter World coming up in the next segment, but right now we're going to catch up with our friend from Fog.net, 247sports.com. Scott Chasen joins us once again on the show. What's up, Scott?
Not much. Has anything been happening? I haven't really been paying attention to social media for a week and a half.
Yeah, social media has been a firestorm, much as most of this country. And, you know, it's interesting because we're seeing a lot of professional athletes speaking out, using their voices for this cause. To fight against racism. As you saw yesterday, things got pretty chaotic with Drew Brees' comment and his teammates, people around the NFL, people around the sports world speaking out and correcting him and admonishing him, and he has certainly stepped in it. But with college athletics, it's a little bit different in that they're not kids. These are young men, but they are still in the phase. I think I go back to when I was 18. That was – you know, even a few years before I really started paying attention to the world around me in a broader sense. And I'm curious, do you feel like there will be a shift in how college athletes use their voice and their platform to speak about causes that they are passionate about in a way that we perhaps haven't seen as much in the past?
Yeah, well, I think there should be. And if you work in college athletics and that scares you, that would tell you that you're probably doing something wrong. I mean, I thought there were two examples on completely opposite ends of the spectrum this week that beautifully and at the same time horrifically illustrated some of the ways that student-athletes can raise a voice and some of the ways that it can affect change, or in some cases, not really. So obviously you have the Clemson incident where an assistant coach said the N-word. The context is a little bit unclear. It was a white coach saying it to a black player, and you know, I guess his side of things was that he was, you know, basically saying it as in, you know, don't say it, but still saying that word. And it sure sounds like Dabo Swinney just kind of swept it under the rug and didn't care enough, even though it clearly bothered the player to the extent that years later he felt the need to bring it up. And I mean, that's been pretty consistent with Dabo Swinney, who's been critical of Colin Kaepernick. He has, you know, according to reports and according to players, they were asked not to protest when a statue on campus was, I think there was some kind of racist vandalism. Again, I don't cover Clemson, so I don't have everything pulled up in front of me. But, I mean, that's Dabo Swinney for you. I think he means well. I think he tries to do the right thing. But I think when the chips are down, Dabo Swinney cares about himself. One, his team, his success, and maybe doesn't care. Now, you look at the other side of the coin, and Mike Norvell was such a fascinating example. He gave a statement to The Athletic.
Florida State
saying
coach.
That, I'm sorry, yeah. He gave a statement to The Athletic and said, hey, I spoke to every player one-on-one, and these are important issues. And a player said, no, that's not true. We all received the same text message. But that's all. And you know what? When I saw that go back and forth, my initial response is, this is a really tough spot for Mike Norvell to be in, because I understand how he got to, you know, saying what he said. I think if he could take it back, I think if he could reword what he said, I think he would have. And because what he did was good. He texted every player, and I think the implication was, hey, if you want to have a conversation, let's talk about this. But that's obviously different than meeting with every single player one-on-one, which is what he said he did. And to his credit, put out a statement right away, apologized for it, said he needed to choose his words more, you know, more correctly. And again, that's a situation that de-escalated. You have Texas reporting around the 247 Sports Network. Well, first of all, I believe there's been a player who said, a four-star, a wide receiver, who said he doesn't want to play another snap of football. And, you know, our network reported, I believe today or yesterday, that Texas had some kind of like a three-hour meeting where players talked and voiced concerns. You look at the University of Kansas that, in what I thought was a tremendous early show of leadership, brought in Anquan Boldin, brought him in. He, for those who don't know, his cousin was killed by a police officer, and that police officer lied, and it was ultimately proved that the police officer lied and said that he had identified himself as a police officer and was basically attacked. And then an audio recording came out where it turned out that wasn't true at all, and the officer got sentenced to 25 years in prison. So Anquan Boldin, who is a Walter Payton Man of the Year in the NFL in the past, is a perfect voice to speak about this. And not only did he talk to players, but he also did a question and answer session and talk to them about affecting change, the importance of voting, being socially conscious. So I thought that was a great initiative. So you're seeing kind of these examples all around the world of college athletics pop up. And again, you know, a lot of this comes from a place of, if you're not doing these things, if you're not teaching these people, I say these people as in all athletes, not just black athletes, just to be clear. If you're not teaching your athletes and the athletes at your university just how to be better people, that's what everyone in college and high school and lower levels of school should be learning, then, yeah, you may get called out for it. You may turn off some players. And to your original question, now we're going to hear about it.
Yeah, it's weird because the Mike Norvell situation was one that really, the way that it almost began and ended all in a couple hour span, right? Where mm-hmm. The Athletic posts that he had spoke to each of the players one-on-one. You have the star defensive lineman coming out and saying, that's not true, we're not working out until further notice. And then what, 2 hours later, he says, talk to Coach Norvell. We appreciate him giving us the platform. And elevating our voices, we're good to go, we love him. And it was start and finish. And you realize that as much as we view college athletics, whereas, you know, the coaches have the power, the coaches are the faces of the university, the coaches are the faces of the program, in a way that will be only in very rare instances do you view it that way with any professional sports team. I mean, Greg Popovich, Bill Belichick, that's about it. That's about it when you think of a coach, when you think of a team as opposed to a star player. In college, it's always the coach first, but I think what we learned today, and maybe we didn't learn it today, but it was illustrated mm-hmm. very poignantly today, was that, well, these players, if they are empowered, do have the power just as much as mm-hmm. they do in professional athletics, and I won't be shocked whatsoever if those players begin to use that power in the future in the way that we saw at Florida State today.
Yeah, and they should. And again, just to the Florida State situation, you know, I think that one was just kind of more of an unfortunate wording. Now, that doesn't excuse Mike Norvell, and obviously he needed to apologize, and I believe he did via statement. So that situation was probably a little bit easier to diffuse as compared to something like Clemson, which, again, has clearly sat with the player for years to the point where, you know, this guy was so bothered by the statement put out by Clemson where he says, hold on a sec, this is not accurate, this is not true. You know, that takes a point to get to the place. And, you know, the Drew Brees thing, you know, moving to the professional side, was so fascinating to me because I think my response probably echoed a lot of people's response at first. Like, when I heard his comments, my gut instinct was to start, you know, arguing, well, hey, you don't like, you know, the non-peaceful protests, so people are kneeling for the anthem, or people are locking arms for the, you know, anthem, or even kneeling before the game, and you have a problem with that, and you get bogged down into this argument. That's not what this is about. And I truly think when you look at the outrage to his comments, a lot of it is over just, again, this constant criticism of no matter how people protest injustice, you're going to find a way to complain. I found it ridiculous that he cited World War II, given, I believe, over 100,000 African-American members of the armed forces served overseas, and I believe over several hundred thousand, maybe over a million, were actually contributing to the United States in World War II. And, you know, by the way, the Army was segregated at the time, so a million of them, African-American soldiers, were supporting the cause in a segregated army, and that's kind of this cornerstone for your argument. But the thing that this really does poorly, or really does that's so dangerous, is it takes all the focus away. You know, I saw a tweet from Ted Cruz today that was talking about the flag and kneeling or whatever and Drew Brees and this and that. That's not the point of this. The point of this is racial injustice, police brutality, that black people in the United States are not treated the same as everyone else. And when people like Drew Brees decide to get on their soapbox about things that happened years ago and make a very specific point and, you know, go out because Drew Brees has to get it off his chest because, you know, God knows why. Like, it's so selfish. It's so disappointing. And he needed to apologize. He did. It's up to everyone individually if they accept that apology.
Talking to Scott Chasen of Fog.net and 24/7 Sports here on Rock Chalk Sports Talk. Scott, as I know you saw last night, Jesse Newell reporting on the KU Board of Directors meeting with Jeff Long and Doug Girard. And most of the big takeaways there were overwhelmingly positive for KU. The first one being that they are going to be on the cautious side of testing players once they return to campus, not just football players, but all athletes. We don't know exactly what the standard is going to be. Is it just testing once you get here? Are you going to be testing throughout the season? I don't know exactly what that's going to look like, but it does look like, at least from the onset, KU is going to be on the more cautious side of things, as we're going to continue to see more and more schools who will probably be kind of blotted across all ends of the spectrum and the steps that they're going to take, or the lack thereof in some cases, I'm sure. The fact that KU is being more cautious in this, I believe, has to be seen as an overwhelming positive, regardless of how you feel about COVID-19 and whether or not it's this is overkill, or whether or not you feel like you should be taking every precautionary measure you possibly can. The fact that KU is being overly cautious just would tell me that they are prepping to try to avoid any sort of setback throughout the season that you know is going to pop up at some point.
Yeah, look, I agree. I actually think Kansas has done a very strong job of just kind of rolling with what is going on in the country, obviously not comparing situation to situation, but just adapting and trying to do the right thing, which, right, you know, we know a lot of entities, not Kansas specific, just in the big picture, the grand scheme of the world, a lot of entities don't do the right thing. They do the easiest thing. You're seeing colleges bring athletes back, Oklahoma State with multiple positive COVID tests. I mean, it's been the same at several colleges at this point. I can't remember them all off the top of my head, so I don't want to, you know, get anyone's wrong, but I would expect 90% of football teams that have 80 plus people on it will have at least one positive test. I mean, we're even learning that while the antibody tests are not necessarily the most accurate thing, we're even seeing, you know, crazy results in bigger cities. Like 10% of people may have already had it, not even known about it, or even more than that in bigger cities. So you would expect positive tests. You would hope that they'll continue to test. But I agree. I think it's a positive sign that they came out and said that not only will they be testing every student athlete, but also that they'll be doing the antibody test. I'm sure they will have policies and procedures, and, you know, if a couple people come back and they do test positive, you know, I don't know yet how the approach of returning people is going to be, although I've seen some athletes tweeting about coming back and their return dates. I would think you could have some trust at this point that they're going to handle it responsibly, and the reason you would have that trust is because of the public comments that were made, which are committing to, you know, testing. Now, personally, I think there should be testing of all athletes, not just at Kansas, everywhere, probably biweekly at minimum and during the season. Weekly doesn't seem like an exaggeration to me, you know, especially because you'll be traveling, you'll be playing different opponents, things like that potentially. Shortening the season doesn't seem like a bad idea to me in case you have to cancel a game and postpone it, you know, and leave a couple extra open dates. That doesn't seem like a bad idea to me, but this seems like a good first step. And certainly what Jesse reported and what I was able to see from that, it all made sense to me. It all seemed like a very responsible way to go.
He is Scott Chasen. You can check out his work at fog.net, 247sports.com. As always, Scott, appreciate your time today, man.
Thanks for having me.
Alrighty, thank you. That is Scott Chasen, fog.net and 247 Sports. It's 20 after the hour. He's Derek Johnson. I'm Nick Schwert. What's going on in the Twitter world? We'll find out next.